නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ Dear Dhamma friends, so we are going to start the Sutta teaching session with a new sutta. Actually, last couple of weeks we have discussed Mahamalunkiputta Sutta available in the Majjhima Nikaya. Where we have discussed about how to abandon five lower fetters or Ambhagiya Sanyojana. And there, actually, the Buddha has highlighted a method which is based upon Jhana, Samatha Pubbangama Vipassana. So, first, one has to attain Jhana, has to master Jhana to some extent, and then one has to emerge from that, and accordingly, one can continue in the vipassana. So that is the approach explained in that particular sutta. So after participating to that sessions, actually some actually asked how one may attain what we call panya vimutta, which is liberated through wisdom without attaining jhana. Are there any suttas particularly mentioned about it? And I have selected one sutta here, which is called Susima Sutta, very interesting one, available in the Sangyutta Nikaya, the connected discourses of the Buddha. Because there the background story is quite interesting. So there was a situation where Buddha was dwelling in the Rajagaha, in the Veluvanarama, Bamboo Grove. And at that time, his reputation and the Sangha reputation was quite vast, and he was well honored, well respected, and venerated and reverent. And again, all the four requisites, robes, arms, and the lodgings, and the whatever the medicines, are easily obtainable. So they can easily have all those four requisites, because the Buddha himself is quite honored, respected, esteemed, venerated, and reverent. And on the other hand, Sangha, the members of the Sangha also are venerated. They also are respected. They also are honored. So as a result of that, they also receive many requisites. So as a result of that, now Buddha and the Sangha are quite dwelling easily, having received all the necessary requisites. So everything's happened in a pretty uplifted way. So the other ascetics are found it difficult because they are not receiving any of those now. So their dhamma or their way of teaching and their colleagues, the crowd, are not yet not respected, not that honored or not that venerated. So as a result of that, their requisites are becoming less and less. Now that has become a problem to them. Now they are losing their requisites, so it's quite difficult for them to continue their path. So now there is a little discussion or conversation going between a particular group of wandering ascetics, Paribrajaka. So different groups were there at that time. Now this group is called Paribrajaka, where they are wandering in search of Dhamma, in search of truth, and now they have kind of a group. So the leader of the group is called Susima, the wanderer Susima. So there are many others who were following him, following his teachings. By the way, they too have affected because of the situation has happened, where only the Buddha and the Sangha are fairly respected, venerated, supported, but not this group. So the members of that group making a suggestion to Susima, wanderer Susima, that he better go and ordain under the Buddha. Not to realize Dhamma, but to steal Dhamma. Once he become a monk, so he can learn Dhamma. And after learning Dhamma, he can come back. He can return to the wandering group, ascetic group, and then he can teach the others. So they also now can preach the Dhamma, what Buddha is preaching, so that their requisites also start increasing because they are also teaching the same Dhamma. Now, this is the proposal made by the group to Wanderer Susima. Susima accepted it. So he seems to be a intelligent guy anyway, but he accepted it. But now he is approaching to become a member of the Sangha, not to learn and to properly practice Dhamma, but to steal the Dhamma. Anyway, now he is deciding to whom that I have to approach. So according to the commentary, he made a kind of an evaluation. So he can't immediately go to the Buddha because he may be busy and he is the teacher, leader, and Venerable Sariputta, Moggallana, so they are also quite esteemed, bit difficult to approach. But how about Venerable Ananda? Venerable Ananda is also quite a knowledgeable monk and closely associating the Buddha. And he knows that whatever the teaching that Buddha delivered to any other person, that again being delivered to Venerable Ananda, so that Venerable Ananda knows everything. He is a library of the Dhamma. He is a treasurer of the Dhamma. So now Susima, after evaluation, he thought, okay, I'll approach Venerable Ananda and then ask that I want to become a monk. Now, accordingly, so he approached Venerable Ananda and he then asked for ordination. Now, how after that happened, was Venerable Ananda not immediately given ordination, rather he accompanied him to the Buddha. Now, there's a kind of a tradition, in case if there is any other wandering ascetic or Nigantha, that the naked ascetic who is trying to become a monk, so they have to undergo a kind of a probation. Typically it's a 4 months probation according to the other suttas. So because now they are completely trying to shift from their faith, a new faith, new Dhamma, now they have to study, to practice, and there are various customs. And as a result of that, they have to undergo at least 4 months probation. After that, the monks may evaluate their performance, their behavior, their caliber, and then only they will be ordained. So this is the typical tradition. Now, this occasion is kind of an interesting one. Now, Venerable Ananda accompanies the Susima to the Buddha, Wanderer Susima to the Buddha, and he paid respect and introduced him to the Buddha. Venerable Sir, this Wanderer Susima says that he wishes to lead the holy life in this Dhamma and discipline. Now he is introducing Susima to the Buddha. Not that Venerable Ananda himself made the ordination, but now he is taking him to the Buddha and introducing him to the Buddha. Now interesting point here is, well then Ananda give him the going forth. Immediately, without going through any probation, now Buddha orders Ananda to ordain him. This is an interesting point. Now, according to the commentary, why this has happened? So, commentary makes several points, several suggestions. So, one thing is, Buddha has seen the caliber, Buddha has seen the potential in Susima. So, after some time, he can become an arahant. So therefore, nothing to worry. So Buddha has seen that point. So that's why, without doubt, without making any reservation, Buddha immediately asked Venerable Ananda to give the ordination. That's one point. The other point is, Buddha has seen the ulterior motive in Susima. So that is to steal the Dhamma. In case he has to go through this probation period, he might get discouraged because he can't learn much, he can't directly approach the Sangha, he can't become a close associate because he is still a probationer. So he would be somewhat restricted. He may not get the opportunity to steal the Dhamma. As a result of that, he might get discouraged. He might even given up the attempt. So without making him discouraged, now Buddha, very much like allowing him to come closer, so he has given the ordination without given a probation. So that's another argument, kind of a suggestion, why Buddha immediately allowed him to go through. Now, of course, we can understand Buddha has seen the whole situation. There is nothing to hide from him. So he has seen the situation, even though this fellow has come to steal Dhamma. Ultimately, he learned the Dhamma, practiced the Dhamma, and he can become an Arahant. So Buddha opens the door without any restriction. Anyway, now Venerable Susima has become a monk, got the ordination, and not only that, he got the high ordination as well. Now he is an Upasampada Bhikkhu. But still the ulterior motive is there. There is no any kind of a change in that. So Susima has become a monk in order to steal the Dhamma, in theft of Dhamma. Now he is continuing that. Now he is learning Dhamma. He is studying Dhamma. And again practicing Dhamma as well. So that's another part. We can't say that he didn't practice. He was practicing Dhamma as well. He is learning, practicing, so things are quite going on. But there was an ulterior motive to steal, and then ultimately once he got enough, he may go back. He may disrobe and go back and become a wanderer ascetic. So that was the plan. Now, at that time, he has noticed that there were many monks approached the Buddha and declared their final deliverance, so final knowledge, final understanding. So that means they have become Arahants, and now they approach the Buddha and explain that or declare that they are Arahants. Destroyed is the birth, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done. There is no more for this state of being. Anya Byakata Kina Jati Usitam Brahmachariyang Katang Karaniyang Naparang Ittattayati Pajanamati. So that means they are directly explaining, okay Bhante, we have become fully enlightened and we have destroyed the birth and completed the Brahmacharya, the celibate life, and what is necessary to be done, we have completed, nothing else to be done. So Anya, Anya Byakata. Anya means a synonym for the Arahantship, full knowledge. Now after that, so Buddha also accepted that. He didn't make any kind of a comment or telling that you are overestimated or something like that, some more to do. Rather, Buddha completely accepted them. So that means they are true Arahants. They truly have become Arahants and they truly came to the Buddha, maybe out of gratitude, as a respect to the Buddha. So they declare that they are Arahantship. Now, this is noticed by Venerable Susima. Now, Venerable Susima was thinking, so this could be the ultimate. So they have now come to the Buddha and they declare their attainment. And there may be something they have acquired. Except the others, this could be the Guru Mutti, what we call the teacher's fist. So they only have that, but not the others. I better approach them and ask that. So basically, Susima is still thinking superficially that Dhamma may have everything, and so something special has been taught to these monks. Accordingly, they have done something special, so I better approach them and ask what they have done. And definitely, they have to have some special powers. They have to have some special psychic powers. So they are the fully enlightened beings, so there should be something special with them. Now, this kind of a thought occurred to Venerable Susima. And now he is approaching one by one. So not only one monk, not only one Arahant, but many Arahants, one after the other, Venerable Susima is approaching. Now, actually these kind of situations are not only this actually. There are other suttas like There's another interesting sutta in Majjhima Nikaya that one monk similarly approaching so-called arahants, and he is asking what is the path actually that particular arahant has used. Kinsukopama Sutta. Kinsukopama Sutta. In that particular sutta, that particular monk, there was no name given, special name given him, to him, but he is approaching the arahants and ask what is the path that they have used to attain the arahantship. The path that they declare are different. Someone say that he went through the ayatanas, the sense, what we call the sense bases, they were looking at that, and as a result of that the purification happened. Someone said they have practiced the elements meditation, by going through that they have attained. Someone said they have gone through the five aggregates, they investigated that, as a result of that they got the purification. Someone said without any specification he has seen the rising and passing away of any phenomena, as a result of that he attained. So likewise the path they have declared but different. Now he approached the Buddha and he got a sermon. So likewise these kind of situations have happened. So this is another occasion where another monk, oh, his name is given, he is Venerable Susima. So he is approaching different arahants and asking another interesting question, not related to the path but related to the psychic powers. So Susima was under the impression, so all these arahants have to be a kind of a heroes, has to be with superpowers, and they should have all the psychic powers. Now he is asking one after the other. Then knowing and seeing thus, so he basically verifying, I have seen that, is it true that you have gone to the Blessed One, to the Buddha, and declare that you have understood, you have completely liberated and destroyed all the fetters, destroyed the birth, and whole life has been lived, and what is necessary to be done, you have completed. Is that true? So then that particular arahant, he answers, yes, yes, friend, yes, Venerable Susima. Now Susima start asking questions. Then knowing and seeing thus, do you, Venerable Ones, wield the various kinds of spiritual power? So this is called the Iddhivida Jnana. So spiritual powers, very special skills, not available to the other mundane people, but only to some special people. So Venerable Susima was thinking these arahants should have those. So accordingly he is asking. So he is giving an explanation. Having been one, you become many. Having been many, you become one. So you probably can remember during one occasion that so such occasions have there. So certain monk, so he did that. And then he again reported, that person approached him, reported the Buddha that he can't find out that particular monk because there are many of the same name. So at that time Buddha mentioned, okay, the first person who is telling the name, you catch him. Then he became one. So that is somewhere, it is also mentioned, available, reported, that there are monks who have that. So he too an arahant. So one person can become many, many can become one. So that is a special power. And then you unhindered go through a wall, through a rampart, through a mountain, as through space. So he can penetrate. And you dive in and out of the earth as through it were water. He can dive in, he can immerse. And on the other hand, he can walk on the water. Walk on water without sinking, as though it was earth. Seated cross-legged, you travel in space like a bird. With your hand, you touch and stroke the moon and sun. so powerful and mighty. You exercise mastery with the body as far as the Brahma world. Now these are the extremely special spiritual powers vested upon this particular person who is with the Iddivida Jnana. Now Venerable Sasima is asking from this Arahant whether you have that. Then he is answer, no friend, I don't have. Then Venerable Sasima asks about the divine ear, where the person who has that can hear many things happen very far, or the discussion among monks, or discussion about any human or divine discussion, so that kind of a thing. Hear both kinds of sounds, divine and human, those are far as well as near. And that particular Arahant answer, no friend, I don't have that ability. He doesn't have the divine eye, Dibbasota. Then Venerable Sasima is asking about the what you call the Parachitta Vijnana. Parasattanam parapungalanam chetaso cheta parachitta pajananta. So this means, so you can read others' mind. So whatever the thought going on at that particular moment, so one is able to reveal. One is able to read another's mind. Parachitta vijnana. So explanation is given. If that person is having a lustful mind, so this person can read, yes, now this fellow is going through a lustful mind. If he doesn't have a lustful mind, now he can understand, yes, now he is not with lustful mind. If he is with mind with hatred, he can recognize this person is now with hatred. If he is not, he can recognize he is not with hatred. If there is delusion, then he can recognize he is with delusion. If there is no delusion, he can recognize there is no delusion. And again, if his mind is contracted, he can recognize that. If it is distracted, again he can recognize that. If the mind is exalted, that is very much in the jhana, going one after the other, and he can recognize that. Unexalted, that also he can recognize that. And when he want to attain another jhana, so he is now making an attempt, at that time also he can recognize where a surpassable mind is there. And when one is completely absorbed to a particular level, and he assumes that this is the supreme, unsurpassable, so that also he can recognize. And then if the mind is concentrated, so this fellow, the person who have this what we call the Parachitta Vijnana, so that also he can recognize that this particular, the meditator's mind has become concentrated. The moment that it becomes distracted, unconcentrated, that also he can recognize. If the mind become liberated, that also can be recognized. If not liberated, that also can be recognized. That means all the mental states, all the thoughts can be recognized, can be read by the person who is with this Parachitta Vijnana Jnana, the capacity to read someone else's mind. Now when this is asked, that particular Arahant answer, no, we don't have that capacity, I can't do that. Now Venerable Sasima is asking another question about the Pubbe Nivasa Anusati Jnana. Pubbe Sang Anusarata Siyati Idam. Recollect your manifold past abodes. Now there is an Arahant, so Venerable Sasima think that he can recollect all his past abodes. Maybe one past abode, maybe 2, 3, 5, 10, 100, 1000. So likewise, many thousands, many eons of world concentration, many eons of world expansion. So it's go far and far. And again, I was with the name of this. I have born to this particular clan, and I had this kind of an appearance. And these are the food that I have used. and I experienced this, I have gone through this kind of pleasure and pain, and this long I have spent there, and passing away from that particular life, I was reborn to another life, and that was how I was named like that. So likewise, he can go on and on to many births, eons, and without any restriction. So now Venerable Susima is asking about this Pubbe Nivasa Anusati Jnana from this particular Arahant. So the Arahant's answer as no friend. I don't have that capacity. I can't read my past lives. I can't see my past lives. Now, Venerable Susima is asking about the clairvoyance, the Dibba Chakku, the divine eye. So that is where, when someone has divine eye, he can see someone else's getting birth. As a result of their good karma, maybe they are getting birth in a good place. Maybe in a human realm, maybe in a divine realm. So, something like that. So, Venerable Susima is asking, do you have divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human? See beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate. And understand how beings fare on in accordance with their karma. There are certain beings who gone through misconduct, through the body, through the speech, through the mind, and reviled the noble ones, held wrong views, and as a result of those wrong views, they did a lot of bad things, killed others, everything. So as a result of that, so they are reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination. Maybe in the hell. And there may be another person who had a proper conduct. They conduct properly through the body, speech, mind, and did not revile the noble ones, and who held right view, and as a result of that, they were doing some wholesome deeds. So after passing away, so they are reborn in a good destination, maybe in a divine or heavenly realm. So have you have this capacity? Can you see that how others are, according to their karma, that they are reborn on that relevant corresponding places? Sugate duggate yata kammupage satte pajanata. So as a result of the karma, so they become either born in the heavenly realm or either born in the hell realm, the good destination or bad destination. Are you capable of seeing that? So that particular Arahant answer, no friend. So he don't have that clairvoyance. He don't have the divine eye. Now these are what we call the Pancha Abhinya. The first one is what we call the Iddivida Jnana, with all the different spiritual powers. Then the Dibba Sota, divine ear, can hear various things. And then reading someone else's mind, Parachitta Vijanana Jnana. And then the fourth one is recollecting manifold past lives, Pubbe Nivasa Anusati Jnana. And the last one is called divine eye, the clairvoyance, Dibba Chakku, where one can see someone else's arising and passing away and getting rebirth at different realms. So after asking all these questions, so this particular Arahants, actually they answer that they don't have that capacity. None of these special skills are available to them. Now Susima is asking a different question. He's asking about the capacity to attain Arupa Jhana. Then knowing and seeing thus, do you, Venerable Ones, dwell in those peaceful deliverances that transcend forms, the formless attainments, having touched them with the body? Now he didn't ask anyway about the Rupa Jhana. That means the first, second, third, fourth Rupa Jhana he didn't ask. By the way, he is asking about directly the Arupa Jhana. the boundless space, boundless consciousness, bound nothingness, and the neither perception nor non-perception. So those are the Arupa Jhana, and so he is asking whether you guys are with these Arupa Jhanas, which are extremely peaceful, and they can transcend forms. So in the Arupa level, there is no matter, materiality. So the mind is uplifted to the level where all the friction of the matter, the body, is abandoned. So mind become completely, vastly transcending all these things, and ultimately kind of a liberation, kind of a opening. So do you have this? So those arahants again answer, no, I don't have that, we don't have that. Now Venerable Susima got confused, because he was with the impression that when someone has attained arahantship, the full liberation, all these special skills have to be available. So that's what he want to verify. And when he is asking for many venerables who are already declared as arahants in front of the teacher, in front of the Buddha, Buddha also admitted, and they also say, yes, we are arahants. But they are now telling they don't have any of these psychic powers. And not only that, they don't have even the ability to attain Arupa Jhana. Now, he says, here now, Venerable Ones, this answer and the non-attainment of those states, how could this be, friends? So that means your declaration as Arahant and inability to attain all these special skills, how can this happen? Now, they answer like this. We are liberated by wisdom, friend Susima. Now we can interestingly find out certain Panyayamutta arahants here. As we discussed last time, there are two categories of arahant: the Panyayamutta arahants and the Ubuddho Bhagavimutta arahants. So Panyayamutta arahants are fully liberated through wisdom. They do not have any of the psychic powers, they do not have any of the here accordingly the jhanas, arupa jhanas. But the upadho bhagavimutta, they all have also panyayamutta, they are fully liberated through wisdom, plus they have the 8 emancipations, 8 vimokkas, they are the jhanas. So they are the Upadho Bhagavimutta. But now here a group of arahants, Venerable Susima is interviewing, questioning. Now they are fully liberated, but through wisdom they don't have any of those concentration powers. So they simply say, we are liberated by wisdom. Now that also Venerable Susima can't understand what does it mean. Now he want better explanation from these arahants. I do not understand in detail, friends, the meaning of what has been stated in brief by the Venerable Ones. It would be good if the Venerable Ones would explain to me in such a way that I could understand in detail what has been stated in brief. Anyway, these Venerables, arahants, they couldn't explain in detail, so they simply say, either you understand or not, Susima, we are fully liberated through wisdom. That's it. So they didn't give a detailed explanation how to attain, what is this particular Panyayamutta state. So what is the wisdom mentioned there? So nothing is very much explained. Basically, they simply say that either you understand or not, we are fully liberated. That's it. You accept it or not, we are fully liberated through wisdom. Now, that's all. Now, Venerable Susima decided to approach the Buddha. because no point of asking from these arahants. They can't give a proper explanation, detailed explanation, so that I can understand. So I better directly approach the Buddha, so he may answer the question. Now he approached the Buddha. Having approached the Buddha, he paid homage to the Blessed One, sat down to one side, and reported to the Buddha the entire conversation he had had with those bhikkhus. Now he explained everything to the Buddha, what the occasion he how went through, the answers given, everything he explained. And at that time, Buddha is giving another short answer. Pubbeko susima dhammattiti jnanam paccha nibbane jnananti. Now Buddha started approaching Venerable Susima. Now he gave a little clue. The Blessed One said, first Susima comes knowledge of the stability of the Dhamma. Afterwards, knowledge of Nibbana. Now this is another interesting point where one established first of all in a proper vipassana jnana, vipassana knowledge. Afterwards, we can say the cutting off of the defilements and other higher vipassana knowledges are going to happen. So dhamma titi, one becomes stable in the dhamma. One's quite sure about the dhamma. So apart from the previous other search, discoveries or research, now only they have come through the path. Now only they have confirmed about the Dhamma. So this confirmation happens first, and after being confirmed and further practicing, they slowly abandon all the defilements and get fully liberated. So this is the kind of a brief explanation given by the Buddha. Pubbeko susima dhamma titi jnanam paccha nibbane jnananti. But Susima didn't understand that answer. I do not understand in detail, Venerable Sir, the meaning of what was stated in brief by the Blessed One. It would be good if the Blessed One would explain to me in such a way that I could understand in detail what has been stated in brief. So Buddha also mentioned, whether or not you understand, Susima, first comes knowledge of the stability of the Dhamma, afterwards knowledge of the Nibbana. Either you understand or not, Susima, first happens the Dhammattiti Jnana, then happens the Nibbana, then happens the other Vipassana knowledges. Then, now actually Buddha went on explaining the Dhamma to Susima, starting with the Dhammattiti Jnana. So Dhammattiti Jnana is where you understand basically the aggregates and their impermanent nature, that their universal characteristics, impermanent, suffering and non-self. And as a result of that, you establish properly in the what we call the Paticca-samuppada. The knowledge of the Paticca-samuppada, imasmin sati idang hoti, imas uppada idang uppajjati, imasmin asati idang na hoti, imas nirodha idang nirujjati. So that what we call the Paticca-samuppada or idappacceta, that principle is a must to know, and certain links of that also must to know. And sometimes it is called pacce parigraha jnana, the knowledge about the causality, the knowledge about how this conditions another, everything is conditioned. So that is something explained as the dhammattiti jnana. So it's a kind of a gradual attainment of that, realization of that. So then only they are fully confirmed about the Dhamma, confirmed about the path. So after accepting that, after fully understood that, fairly establishing that, then they are further continuing their practice. Accordingly, the other different knowledges going to happen. Now actually Buddha give a detailed explanation about this vipassana point. So he is asking with the from Venba Susima, is form permanent or impermanent? Is form permanent or impermanent? So starting from that, so the five aggregates. So basically, the aggregates related their true reality is what now Buddha is verifying with Venerable Susima himself. Now the point here is that how to know whether the form is permanent or impermanent. Is it because the Buddha said that? So Buddha mentioned that the form is impermanent. Buddha said that the feelings are impermanent. He said perceptions are impermanent. He said the formations are impermanent. He said the consciousness are impermanent. So how we know? Because Buddha has said. So this is the knowledge that we have to have. So that is also one level. What we have heard in previous occasions through other suttas. So proper belief or a thorough belief that Buddha has mentioned that all these aggregates are impermanent. So I too trust the Buddha and I too accept five aggregates are impermanent. So that is what we call the Saddhanusari. Another one is called Dhammanusari. So he did a further contemplation. So Buddha has mentioned like this. So he himself has done some contemplation, but not through direct knowledge, but some superficial theorizing or logically thinking, rationalizing. So that based upon that, he come to a conclusion, yes, five aggregates are impermanent, what we call as a Dhammanusari. Now another level is where one has fully understood that through direct knowledge. So that is where the Sotapanna comes to the picture, stream winner. So he himself has understood through his own investigation. He has used some of his concentration, his mindfulness. As a result of that, he has continued Vipassana practices. He himself understood directly through his direct knowledge that things are impermanent. Form is impermanent, feelings are impermanent, perceptions are impermanent, formations are impermanent, consciousness are impermanent through his direct knowledge. In other terms, we can say he has practiced Satipatthana to a higher degree, and through the practice of Satipatthana, he understood the true nature of the five aggregates. Now, one may can start the practice of Satipatthana but didn't arrive the full understanding. So that is also another possibility. Say one started practicing Satipatthana, not mere belief coming from the Buddha's teaching, but rather he started his own investigation, but not yet come to a proper conclusion, not yet come to a full understanding. He is still continuing it. As we discussed previous occasions, even in the Yamaka Sutta, while continuing that, one can even come to wrong conclusions. One can even go to wrong views. So that is also possible. Because still one is not confirmed. One is not yet stabilized in the path. There are many pitfalls. Now, on the way, while one is practicing Satipatthana, while one is developing Vipassana, still, till he fully arrive the Dhammattiti Jnana, where he understood the causality, where he understood the dependent origination, Parisamuppada, so it means he hasn't yet seen or established in the Dhamma. Anyway, he is practicing. He is practicing Anapanasati, he is practicing rising and falling, he is practicing elements meditation, he is practicing Vedanupassana, he is practicing Sittanupassana, but not yet seen the causality, not yet seen the dependent ordination. So it seems a very, very interesting point highlighted here in the Dhammattiti Jnana. So the Buddha highlights about the causality, the dependent ordination, the Parisamuppada, the Didappaccetha. So we'll see that maybe next week. So that's better to spend some time on that explanation. So I'll stop here for today, keeping some time next time to discuss about this Vipassana part in detail. So with that, I'd like to conclude today's Dhamma discussion, this Sutta teaching session. Now I'd like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. If anyone has any questions, feel free to raise your hand or send them via the chat.
Okay, everyone is silent. No questions. Probably once we explain about the next part, probably they may have, they may start asking questions. Anyway, today mere fundamentals, talking about the background.
Yeah, it doesn't look like there are questions yet, Bhante.
Yeah. So then anyway, I can wind up the session then, keeping some time for next week, so that we'll discuss a little bit in detail about the Vipassana knowledges, Dhammatiti Jnana particularly, and maybe we'll keep some that time next time.
Looks like we have one raised hand, Bhante.
Yeah.
Okay, I'd like to invite Renika. You may unmute.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Can, but little, sometimes
Hello?
There are little disturbance anyway.
But it is actually the... Hello?
Go ahead,
Hello?
Please. Go ahead, yeah.
I think there's an echo coming in, but isn't there?
We don't hear.
Okay. The thing is, this is actually regarding my meditation at the moment.
Yeah.
So, not really to the Dhamma at all,
mm-hmm.
but I think it can connect also somewhat. The thing is, I was listening to Dhamma quite a lot about the Manasi Mayava and all your other Dhamma talks too. And I was feeling that, you know, do I have experienced the Dhamma? Why I am still not doing right? So it means there's so many experiences I had, but still I'm not doing right. I feel that I'm still in this mundane world, and you know that I cannot move forward. So that's what I thought. I don't know whether my question is right,
mm-hmm.
and whether you got my question. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Monday.
Mm-hmm. So it is possible because
the thing is I go through the Anapanasati and I go and sit in that quiet, untouched unentangled and unattached place for a long time. I can sit there, but I think still I feel that when I come out of that, I'm still in this mundane world. I can't see things, and sometimes I get confused and things like that. So how do I, you know, I think I should do something more, or I should, my practice is not enough, or I'm not sure, Bhante, what to do.
Yeah, okay. So basically, if you are able to establish yourself in this unattached state, what we call as anicitta state, where mind does not associate anything, not established on anything, so it is a mastering of that, what you need to do now. So basically, the mind remains unattached, without associating anything, not attaching to anything in the world, so you are experiencing some clarity in the mind. So try to maintain that clarity in the mind, without allowing the mind to think too much. So this thinking, doubting, skeptical doubt, and all these things actually further confuse or ruin the situation. Rather, now we need to simply calm down, just relax, just maintain that inner silence. So once you are maintaining that inner silence, Then what happens is, so you understand that the original nature of the mind, unconditioned nature of the mind, where you understand, okay, my mind was colored. So I have become someone, I have assumed to someone, and then again mind become conditioned, mind become colored, going through various defilements, and all that friction happens, all the stresses are happening, because I have lost my original point, I have lost my home position, the mind's home position. So that home position is where the grounding happens, earthing happens, so you relieve all the stress, remove all the tensions, and avoid any kind of an oscillation in the mind, and just be in that middle range, just be in that baseline. So that baseline become a refuge then. So that is how a very original type of nature of the mind, where it is unconditioned, not colored, not disturbed, very much like the water, which is still. So if I remember, can you remember probably that we were discussing about the five hindrances. So there Buddha give very interesting similes to the hindrances. So assume that we want to see our face through water. So the best option is to have still water. Again, a clear water. Completely still, completely clear water, pure water. Then only we can see our mind. So we can see our face. But the moment it become colored, then we can't see our mind. See our face. So that is very much like the Kamachanda, the sensual desire, where the mind has become colored, water has become colored.
Yeah.
And then Buddha mentioned, okay, when it is in a kind of a hot, evaporating type of level, going through some bubbling, that is very much like the Vyapada, the ill will. So mind has become touched upon ill will, going through ill will. There also we can't see the face, we can't see the reality. So the water has become, you know, heated. So that's another level. And the Thinamidda, Sortantopa, Buddha mentioned, is something like where we kept it for in a gloomy, dark place, and the moth also has come. And as a result of that, we can't see the face. And another thing is, turbulence can happen, waves can happen. At that time also we can't see the face. It is why the restlessness and the regrets about the Uddacca Kukkuccha. And doubt is also very much like, as far as I can remember the simile, I think that is where the water become, say you are kept keeping in the dark, and where we can't see the face. So likewise, some various similes Buddha has given to these five hindrances, but the proper possibility is where the mind become completely purified, water become completely purified, and then only we can see the true reality. So similarly, so when we are, the more we are maintaining the mind free from defilements, free from attachments, free from conditioning, free from conceptual proliferation, free from overthinking, so then mind settles. So not through very, say, hard, very strong, deep concentration, but with very quiet, silent abiding. So that quiet, silent abiding is where slowly, slowly reveal the thing. So what has happened? How I have entangled things? How I was conditioning things? How I was overthinking? So all our drawbacks, all our shortcomings become more and more evident to us, so that we understand, okay, this was what has happened. Now it's a matter of further purifying the mind. It's a matter of further avoiding this eye-making, mind-making. So likewise, you properly understood what next to do. So that is where the arriving of the Dhamma, we can say, okay, I have understood this. This is what I further need to do. So that is where you come to a kind of a conclusion, or come to a kind of a destination, where you become somewhat confident in your own path, confident in your own practice, by seeing your own self, by seeing the clarity of the mind. So therefore, my advice is, if you are able to time arrive that unassociated state, anicca state, unentangled state, just be in that for some time. And even while walking, just be in that. Allow the mind to rest in that. Then automatically the insights may happen, showing you the path.
But the thing is, why I feel like that is when I go into that the peaceful state, it's like, you know, in one of the Dhamma talks, you have said that we are watching the river. The river is flowing. We are watching. We don't interfere the river, and we don't try to see which part of the water or which part of things, but it's just flowing and we are just watching. You know, that kind of, you know, the thoughts are coming in, but it goes away. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with me. You know, things are happening. You know, I can stay without, I can stay untouched. But still, I feel like that my mind is like the pond is clear, but inside I still have the mud and the rotten things inside.
Definitely.
So that is why I'm trying to check out, you know, how can I stir that and take it out and throw it out.
Yeah,
know,
that's the thing. That's the thing. So when we arrive at temporary liberation, what we call as a Tadanga Nibbuti, that means only a temporary liberation, a temporary freedom. Still there are defilements available. Still there are that, what you said, the sedimented things are there. Still some impurities are there. Now it's a matter of purifying them. Now we have to find out the path, how to purify them. So that's the path. So that recognition, that honest understanding, the humble understanding that still there are impurities, time to time mind go and entangled, time to time mind go and become impure. Again and again, sometimes it become clinging to things. So that means still impurities are available. Asava and anusaya, the influxes and the fetters are what you call the latent tendencies are still available, so I have to carefully even remove these fetters, even remove these impurities. So that has to be your vision, that has to be your goal. Then it's a matter of further continuing the path, living the Dhamma, carefully understanding what are the drawbacks, shortcomings still available, where I go wrong, where this particularly eye-making, mind-making happens. So slowly, slowly abandoning those positions, avoiding getting victimized to defilements, maintaining that unattached state of mind as much as possible, even without a deep concentration, trying to maintain that. So that indicate that there's a significant reduction of the influence coming from those influxes and the latent tendencies. So it will take time. So we can't be impatient about it. We may want to get purified, but it may happen naturally, gradually. So we have to go through the path, continue in the path. So slowly, slowly, we may understand a kind of a gradual reduction in the defilements. Gradual reduction in our, say, graspings. Gradual reduction in the kind of stress in the mind. So that will show, okay, there is a slow progress.
Okay. One day, I hope I understand and I will try my best to do that. Thank you very much.
And again, the Suttame Jnana also quite interesting and quite important. That's why, I mean, we are discussing Buddha's teaching so that we get thoroughly understand the Buddha's teaching and we thoroughly understand where we are and what we need to do, and we become somewhat clarified about the path. So that thorough understanding, a kind of a confirmation coming from the Buddha's teaching as a Suttame Jnana, that is also very, very important. So otherwise, you know, we become somewhat doubtful again and again, not knowing what to do, and something like that. So therefore, the discussion and the further learning about the Dhamma also plays a pivotal role.
Thank you, Bhante. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Chitta Devi for another question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Now, Bhante, you said I told from the previous question that you should maintain that state of purity, but that isn't that an automatic thing? We can't force it to have to be maintained. Once you go into that state, I mean, we can't force it. It's just cause and effect, isn't it? Is that right? Am I right in saying that?
To some extent, yes. Because thing is, when we are practicing, so as a result of the practice, we arrive that. So that is the first stage. We are the practice is the diving board, very much like. So when that diving board is there, then we are able to make the jump, something like that. But more and more we cultivate that, more and more we are familiarizing with that. So then the freedom become available to us. Now that is why Buddha mentioned in the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta. So first what we have is the upekkha nanatta nanatta sita. It's a diversified kind of freedom, diversified equanimity. So we are arriving at various paths. Assume that you are practicing kayanupassana. So as a result of that, you are able to arrive unattached state. Once you practice vedanupassana, you are able to arrive that unattached state. You are watching the mind. So there you found a gap. Through that, you are arriving that unattached state. So different paths are there. But ultimately, where we arrive is the same. That is the unattached state. So slowly, slowly, it's a matter of stabilizing that, consolidating that. So the unattached clarity of the mind become more and more available. So that is where Buddha mentioned, now you are arriving a state, upekkha ekatta ekatta sita. We are a unified equanimity. Now you don't need the previous training part. Now you don't need that, the gathering part, diving board. You don't need, because now you are slowly, slowly establishing yourself in the upekkha ekatta ekatta sita. Very much the unified type of equanimity. And Buddha said it is closer, equal to the arupa jhana. Akasananchayatana, vinyananchayatana and akinchanyayatana. It has very much now diverted or converted very much like a samatha meditation now. Because you are not practicing too much about anicca dukkha anatta, but you are living in that freedom, you are living in that unattached state. So there it's very much like the mind is spacious, awareness is pervaded, awareness is available. Nothing is there, no one is there, no person, no individual or say no object is there, so nothingness is there. So likewise, Buddha gave a very interesting explanation there, that you now arrive upekkha ekatta ekatta sita. So it's a matter of now consolidating in that state. So while being there, now Buddha say, okay, now it's a matter of practicing non-identification, what we call as the atammeta. So now don't become anyone. Don't assume as anyone. Don't create an I. Don't create a self. Don't create a person. Don't become someone. And don't become something. So basically, atammeta has to be practiced while being in that clarity. So that is the further purification has to happen. Further vipassana has to develop. So that you are slowly, slowly abandoning this I-making, mind-making and all that. So that is, in a way, we can say it's further practicing vipassana. In one point of view, we can say we are understanding thoroughly about the non-self nature. We can say we are thoroughly understanding the impermanent nature. So likewise, still we can say we are practicing anicca dukkha anatta. But on the other hand, we can say to another level, where we are doing further on to the what we call as the khayanupassana, vayanupassana. Say we are seeing the passing away part. or we can say we are practicing Patanisagganupassana, where the abandoning is happening further and further. We are trying to dwell in that unattached state as much as possible. So likewise, the practice become more into not a strenuous practice, but going through a level where, that's why in the Dhamma it is explained, Viveka Nisitang, Viraga Nisitang, Nirodha Nisitang, Vasagga Parinami. Where you are more and more trying to dwell in that Viveka, dwell in that resting, dwell in that unassociation. And Viraga, more in that dispassionate maintenance of the mind. Nirodha, keeping it in the cessation without promoting any kind of a rising part. And culminated in the freedom, Vasagga Parinami. More and more culminated or uplifted or fulfilled in the freedom. So this is the teaching.
So this state that we, that people go into it during meditation, what you're talking about is mainly in the meditation. In the daily life of the
we have to bring it.
That's what I am.
Yeah, what we understand during the meditation has to be brought to the daily life.
So you can't force it to come to during the daily life, to it just comes.
It has,
is that right? Am I saying it correctly?
Yeah. I mean, it has to naturally, slowly, has to be available.
So I think
the practice is practice is the sole thing. Basically, we can't force it to come. We, as we are continuing, as we are further familiarizing with the practice, so then it becomes available.
Yes, because during the practice of the meditation, it is not difficult. But once you get into the real world, you still have to contemplate. I think this is how I do it. I don't know whether that's correct. I try to contemplate when situations arise where supposing some emotion arises, then I quickly tell myself, now I'm making a self, and I quickly try to drop it.
Yeah.
So that is how I practice. So yes. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. Because now that is also Buddha recommended, no? Olarikam sankatam padisamuppanna. So that's a kind of a reminder to the mind. Okay, you don't dwell in that entangled state, confused state, stressed out state. You just, so this is impermanent. This is kind of a mundane, this is kind of a gross, this kind of a friction. So this is a conditioned state. So likewise, you make a little reminder to the mind. Again, go back to that resting, quiet, unattached, unstressed kind of a mentality. It's a kind of a reminder. That's fine.
Because I think it's all good going to retreats and being calm and peaceful, but then once you get to the real world, that is the test. No, Bhante, that is the test.
Exactly.
So I think that we have to need to practice as much as possible. That is the effort that comes in. To really improve, would you agree with me?
Yes, definitely.
Because now even listening to a Dhamma talk, you can go into a very peaceful sort of state, like an equanimous state. But then when you are out in the world, that is when you can't be in that state. You are in reality, no? You have the trials and tribulations that come facing you. So that's the test where the effort has to come in, the mindfulness has to come in. That is the time that you have to practice this. Isn't that right?
Correct.
So would you agree that we have to put these or the Eightfold Path into practice in the daily life?
Definitely.
More,
yeah.
Because it's quite easy to sit doing the walking in a peaceful, quiet, secluded area, and all these things can come. But if it's not there all the time, the rest of the time in your life, then that's the time that you had to put in all this effort and mindfulness and all these sila, samadhi, panya. Isn't that right?
Correct. Actually, that's why we need to understand, actually, when we are going through those ups and downs in our life, so sometimes we are not that good. We are not that capable. We again get entangled. So then we understand still the shortcomings. Again, so we find out the secluded time, some rest time. Again we sharpen our faculties. Again, we do our own secluded practice so that we become somewhat reinforced. Again, we go through the lifetime situation. Again, a daily activity. Again, a stressful situation. Again, we test ourselves. Is it capable of handling this? Is it capable of going through this without getting to entanglement, without getting stressed up, without getting angry, something like that? It's a kind of a reinforcement that we have to go through, that both situations are necessary.
Yes, I understand that you have to do that part of it, sitting down or walking, to get into these states, to be familiarizing yourself, to be in that state. And then more and more, as you say, you bring it, you try to bring that into your daily life with all these other things that we discuss.
Exactly.
And then there are moments when you are just sitting. Also, these states come, even though there are people around. Sometimes these states come.
Correct.
Isn't that right, Pandit?
Correct. Definitely come. Mm. Yes.
So it's a balance.
Mm.
But for me, I feel, you can sit for an hour or whatever, or go to a retreat and do whatever, but then at the end of the day, the test comes in the daily life.
Definitely.
And that is the time that you have to, that is the time that we have to put in this effort.
Exactly. Yes, very true.
Yeah, because I think the first question also, I think when you go into these states and all this, that's okay, that's good.
Mm.
But then when you go into the daily life and you see all, sometimes you don't even have time to see what is arising and passing away.
Yeah.
Because, people are living a lay life with all the responsibilities of life,
mm-hmm.
aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm. Okay, Bhante, thank you.
Okay.
Looks like we're inspiring more questions, Bhante.
Yes.
Renuka, you have your hand up again. Did you have a follow-up question?
Jennifer, if I get an opportunity, I would like to add one more thing into my question or my statement.
Mm-hmm. Sure, go ahead, please.
Thank you. Bhante, sorry to trouble you again, Bhante, but what I thought is I'll let you know that recently when I sit and meditate during my time, because when I was early days, when I was practicing, I looked at the breath and its incoming and outgoing breath, and the breath was breaking in, and when the later on breath is I lose the breath, and I was in that clear untouched place or unassuming or it doesn't have any attachment, or that place I came in through my breath, ending my breath. So I can actually go into that space at any time because of I have been practicing quite a long time. I can go into that place very soon at any time, even in any busy place, I can get into that state of mind. But recently, when I was sitting and being in that space, I could see my breath coming in, happening that like a rewind, going through again and seeing all these empty spaces during that breath also. So it's a funny thing that it's like a replay, going back to from the beginning to the end, I can see that is happening, and it's keep on happening like that. So I thought this must be some kind of a inside I'm trying to, or guidance I'm getting with this kind of a, it's kind of sankalpana, but anyway, I felt that because these are coming over and over again into my mind, and I'm watching that happening, replaying that, so I thought I'll let you know and I ask what, is there anything I should learn out of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, or I think, yeah, it's an emptiness and the empty space, and you know, you can poke yourself, you can see so many empty space even during that process. So I feel that the empty space is the world. Now am I going and catching or getting attached at empty space? You know, so those are the questions
yeah.
I am.
No need to get attached. No need to get attached. Just
yeah.
be in that empty space in a more relaxed manner, without conditioning the mind. So that, as you said, various thoughts are coming and going, various images are coming and going, various urges are coming and going. So you understand. So how things are happening? How I was. Pretty much like behave like a fool previously, but now at least I have the capacity to watch it. That is the important thing. So that's why Buddha mentioned panyaya disva disva pahatamba. So you have to see all these things through wisdom again and again, 100 times, 1,000 times. You have to see again and again how these things are happening, how they are coming and going, and basically how these temptations are happening in the mind, how these desires are happening in the mind, how feelings are conditioning the desires. So likewise, we are doing a very slow analysis now, because now we have a better understanding, we have a better ability, a good stage for us to see all these things. Now we are doing some thorough understanding the whole thing. It is not that unlike before. Now thoughts are not coming quickly, one after the other. One may thought come and it may disappear. Another thought come, it may disappear. So likewise, we have a better opportunity to understand what's really going on. So that very understanding is very much like rewarding. It will show us, okay, this is what needs to be done. So these are the places I have the weaknesses. These are my strengths. So these are the areas I need to be careful. So likewise, it gives us a true understanding, a thorough, humble, true understanding about the situation, and things become more and more clear. And as you said, then the point is, without much concentration, without deep concentration, we can, at least for some time, we can dwell in that peace. It's a mundane, a kind of mundane in the sense, kind of surface level. Say while walking, your mind is unattached. Say while eating, your mind is unattached. While sweeping, the mind is unattached. So you are in a daily activity, but mind stays in that home position. It is not going through any kind of a oscillation. Rather, it rests in that middle range. So that kind of thing, slowly, slowly, available to us, we can notice that. So that indicates, okay, now the mind is settling. Resting.
Bhante, recently I heard Dhamma, actually you I think you and Lokaswami Nacha both were discussing, you know, you have to leave the both ends and you come into the middle, and you have to leave the middle too. So
mm-hmm.
that is what I felt. I felt mm-hmm. like I'm holding into the middle and, you know,
mm-hmm.
trying to
no, middle.
I'm holding into middle.
No,
so,
thing is, so that middle.
That
so
is
what
the
is the
questions came? Yeah.
So yeah, if you can remember the Majjhe Sutta, so there are six definitions given to this. So what are the two extremes and what is the middle? So there are six definitions given to that, and all that six ends we have to leave, and we have to recognize the middle, and even the middle has to be abandoned. So assume that we are talking very, very easy to understand, say the past and the future are the two extremes. The present is the middle. So we have to fully arrive the present through mindfulness. So now we are in the present moment. But in the present moment, if we are grasping it, so that is also wrong. So then we have to be in the present moment. Just the mere awareness has to be available without grasping, even the present moment. Now suppose at present there is a beautiful song, beautiful sound happens. It is happening present moment. It is not in the past, not in the future, but in the present. But if we grasp that present moment sound, that is also where we go wrong. Rather grasping it, we can be fully aware of it. Okay, there is sound happens. That's it. Your mind remains unattached. You are in a knowing level. But at the present moment, there is a sound going on. So something like that. You are not attached to the present. You are not attached to the sound happening in the present. But you are at a level, different level. You have your vantage point. Where you are simply looking at things. You are fully awakened. You see things. That's all. In the present moment, you are not attached to anything.
Thank you, Vante. Thank you very much. The opportunity is so great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Yasala for the next question.
Hi. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Vante. Vante, I'd like to share my meditation experience with you for your advice. Mainly with regard to the sitting meditation, Vante. So when I sit down, I will start with the anapana, and then very quickly I would say I would go into looking at the thoughts. The reason is because I do not encounter like body pains and all anymore. So because of that, I do maybe one time or so the body scan. But mainly I can see, I'm looking at the thoughts and see what are the thoughts coming and going. And then I would kind of tell to myself one day, okay, now there are no thoughts. So then I really keep looking at my mind to see there are no thoughts. And then I can see after a while, I'm already in the middle of some thought. Then I realize, oh, okay, now I'm in the thought. Somehow after a while I realize, then I'm going back and starting again. So this is the kind of cycle I'm going through, and I can see most of the time actually I realize I do encounter that freedom in the sense like relax situation in the body, and I feel relaxed. And then at the same time when a thought comes, I would sometimes like to think, why did that thing come, what could have triggered that? Then again wouldn't go too deep into that, but just try to think of it. So that is how my meditation cycle is going. Pretty much I can see empty space in the mind, looking at it, then thought comes, then I notice it, then again I go back to empty, and then continue Bhante until 1 hour.
Yeah. So it's good, no problem. So just a matter of continuation, because then this incidents, these phenomena become less and less, and you are able to very much like experience more and more space. So still there are inferring thoughts, or rather incoming thoughts, and those incoming thoughts now you are not enjoying, you are not delighted with them, you are not getting entangled. So that thoughts naturally will pass away, and there may be long periods of absence of thoughts. Try to be in those absence of thoughts so that you understand that middle. You understand that unattached state. So it will happen naturally as you are continuing. It seems what you are doing is correct. Your mic generates some noise.
Is it clear now?
Yeah.
Okay, so sorry. Yes, Bhante, I understood what you mentioned. So pretty much like I tell to myself, okay, now I'm in anishritosa viharati, nachakinti loke, that kind of
that statement. Yes. Also, you now you don't need to tell, just be. allow the mind to be quiet.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Silently.
Okay, but
silent,
yes, I'll continue.
Yeah, yeah. Silently be in that state.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante. Thank
okay.
you much.
Yeah. Yeah. Teruvan Sannai.
Teruvan Sannai.
Bhante, I believe that's all of the questions on our side.
Okay, fine. So here today we don't have questions from our side. And so we are going to conclude today's session. So we have able to discuss some interest in Dhamma. And all the minutes we accrued, we share with all the past relatives, all the celestial beings and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to understand, realize Buddha's teaching. We'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha jabumatta deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanang. Akasattha jabumatta deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanang. Akasattha jabumatta deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparang. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Dan.